Okay, so keep your fingers crossed. Again, apologies for the delay. This is my first time using Camtasia. The plus will be that I intend to record all of the lectures, so again, if you miss a lecture or want to review at a later point, that will be available to you. Okay, so the module we're here for today is Data Network Protocols Analysis and Simulation. And there will be two lectures for this module, myself, Jennifer McManus, and those are my contact details, and then Connor McArdle. And we'll both be taking roughly half of the lectures. Okay. For myself, the easiest way to contact me is via email. If you want to see me face-to-face, please drop by my office. I'm not there all the time. I've got a lab. I've got other places to be. I've got other lectures. If you want to see me, either phone or drop me an email, and we can certainly arrange a time to talk. Okay, and I'm sure Connor would have similar arrangements. Okay. All of the course material for this module will be available via Moodle. So, are you all familiar with Moodle? Okay, good. So, it's pretty straightforward to use. You just, sort of select, once you're registered for the course, you'll be able to select for the course, and then, again, it's pretty obvious where the material is. Okay, so what is this module about? Well, I start with what it isn't, and it's not a review of sort of basic networks. If you've had an undergraduate networks module, probably what you did was you took something like the OSI model, and you marched through the various layers, the various components of the network, and you talked about how all of those components were implemented. Okay? We're not going to do that in any sort of comprehensive or survey sort of way in this module. If you're not familiar with sort of the basics of networks, some sort of survey of networks, then I would strongly recommend you check out some basic networks textbook. I've referenced Kuro's later on. There's other ones, Tannenbaum. Pretty much anything that's introduction to networks will give you the same view of what's going on. Okay. In this lecture, we're going to mention a few of the sort of basic principles that it'll be important to have at the back of your mind, specifically sort of the layered architecture. And so this is one of the basic design principles of network. Networks are an incredibly complex entity, so how were they sort of split up into smaller, more manageable pieces? Okay, and so the idea is, again, there's this layered architecture. Each layer performs certain functionality, and then there are a number of protocols that will implement that functionality. Okay, so again, if you do a survey of networks, you'll probably discuss a lot of those protocols. What we'll be doing is we'll tend to look in depth at a very few number of examples of protocols that sort of illustrate why certain design decisions were made, and what's important to us is how do you analyze those decisions? How do you mathematically determine whether those are good decisions or not? Okay. And similarly, communication services just refers to, again, almost what's the end target of networks? Well, the end target is delivery of data. I mean, that might be a voice stream or some sort of bit stream for a computer, but the target of a network is to deliver it, and there are various modes of delivery that suit different types of data better or worse. And again, that was what drove the development of networks. And that's why we have, at least have had till quite recently and still have to some extent, a separate telephony and computer system. The data that was being transferred was different, and different design decisions were more efficient for one or the other. Okay. And so those are things that, you should have clear in your mind. We're not, particularly going to reference it, but at points we'll be sort of dipping into, again, various portions of this architecture and, again, referring to various characteristics of data which are relevant to our analysis. Okay. So what are we going to do? Well, we're going to look at some of the key mathematical tools that are used for designing and analyzing networks. Okay. And so what makes networks so complicated? Well, what makes them so complicated is that they're unpredictable. You have end users generate traffic. You have very little control over how much traffic they generate, when they generate this traffic. And so that's going to put different loads on the network at different points of time. Similarly, within the network, sort of how that traffic gets processed will take varying amounts of time at various points in the network, depending on the type of traffic, depending on how much traffic there is, etc. So what we find is that we need models that incorporate this randomness into them. Okay. And queuing is the mathematical analysis of this randomness. Okay. It's a way of representing fairly accurately the type of randomness that you encounter in networks. And then, depending on what assumptions you make, you can come up with sort of finite solutions, what we call closed-form solutions. So you can get an answer out about when you ask certain questions. Okay. So we're going to explore what is a queue, what sort of answers can you get. And finally, what makes it interesting for us is, again, that we can apply it to some fundamental problems within networking. A very nice one is network provisioning. The telephony network has used queuing for ages to to decide questions about network provisioning. And again, if you make the right assumptions, or if you make assumptions, you can get a very nice solution, which again you'll see later in the term. Okay. Now the problem is, we can make these assumptions, we can get very elegant solutions. There's a question over how accurate are those assumptions. Are those assumptions true enough to life that you're happy that the answer you get has any bearing on the actual system you're trying to examine? Okay, so for the big assumption is sort of how traffic is generated sort of going into these networks usually, okay? And again, to get a closed form solution, you have to make fairly restrictive assumptions. If you don't think those assumptions are valid, then you have to resort to simulation techniques instead. And from our point of view, simulation is essentially a representation of queuing where we don't have to make these assumptions. And the trade-off is that we can't get a single solution. What we can do instead is sort of try out various scenarios. So we have this model, and now we say, well, if we have this traffic, what happens? Okay. So it's not a general answer in the sense that it only sort of applies to what we put into it, but on the other hand, you can try a number of different scenarios and try and come to some general conclusions. Okay. So we will have a look at that, and finally, and again, we'll apply this to some networking problems. What we have in mind, again, is to apply it to provisioning, probably within a cellular network because it's a bit more complicated and we want you to have some fun. And finally, what we'll do is we'll ask you to compare the two methods. So how do your answers differ with one method and another? Okay. And so why is any of this interesting? Well, it's interesting because it has driven the design process from the 60s onwards, maybe even earlier, and it's still in use today. Okay. Some of you might be familiar with network simulation packages, NS, OpNet. These are very valuable tools for analyzing networks, and they're all based on the underlying theory that we're going to talk about in this module. So it's not that by the end of this module you'll be able to write the entire OpNet simulator, but hopefully you'll appreciate, again, what some of the basic principles are that underlie the design of the OpNet simulator, for instance, or the design of the NS simulator. Okay, so are there any questions? Okay, so I think these are the learning outcomes, and again, they all have to do with taking on board these analytical methods. So you're going to get a treatment of queuing theory from first principles. So we're going to start with what is a probability distribution and move reasonably quickly forwards to how does that relate to a queue and the representation of a queue. Okay. We're going to look at the design and implementation of simple simulators. So again, you're going to write your own very simple simulation package. Okay, so you're going to represent the randomness, you're going to represent the behavior of the system, and you're going to generate output. Okay, and finally, you're going to analyze that output. All of this, this sort of stuff could be done in the context of a statistical analysis course or a maths course. What makes it, again, interesting to us is that we are going to apply it or look at how it's been applied to communication systems. Okay. And so we're going to go through sort of the very basic standard results, And then we're going to sort of start pushing out and try and sort of give you an appreciation of where the assumptions are, how much you can play around with those assumptions, and sort of how they have an impact on the sorts of results you get. Okay, so again, that's we're just go through the basic probability. We'll start the simulation fairly early on. To some extent, there's a question of where it should be, since from our point of view, a lot of what we're doing is we're simulating queues. So we put it before a queuing system, just again, so you could get started on the assignments. Okay. And then again, application, we're going to have spend 4 or 5 lectures talking about applications to networking systems. Okay. So that's what's going to happen in the course. Today is more of a review of basic networks. Obviously, it's not possible to have a complete and comprehensive review in 2 hours, say, the 2 hours we have left. So what I'm hoping to do is to just pick out a few of the highlights, a few of the things that are going to be important for our specific module. Again, if you've never seen networks before, it's well worth your while to get out some basic textbook and at least have a skim. Okay. So we're going to start off with a very brief history of networks. And again, this is sort of interesting because you get the contrast between telephony networks and then computer networks. And historically, they've been sort of completely different animals, and they were designed, again, based on the predominant sort of traffic they were carrying, which would have had significantly different characteristics. Okay. And so then, in terms of network basics, we're going to look at network services, and this has to do, again, with supporting traffic of with specific characteristics. And it's basically just a taxonomy, a way of categorizing the ways you can look at this support. And then we'll say a bit about the layered architecture, which again is how the sort of very high level view of how networks are organized, how they provide the services they do. Okay. And so what's missing from all that is essentially any mention of specific protocols. This is good and bad. The problem is that at any level, it takes a reasonable amount of time to sort of discuss specific protocols, or even just generically the functionality of protocols. So we're not going to do any of that here. At some point, again, when we're applying some of our analytic techniques, we're specifically going to be focusing on the link layer, so the point-to-point connectivity. And for that, we will, as the start, discuss at least the sort of basic characteristics of the protocols for that layer. But again, that's one layer and one bit of functionality. It's, again, you should be aware that each layer has its own set of protocols, and not only that, but the sort of interactions between the layers can be quite complex from a performance point of view. From a functionality point of view, they're actually quite straightforward. That's why it was designed this way, because the functionality of the network became quite clear and quite understandable. But you do take performance hits because of that. Okay. And finally, we will say a few words about network performance. And what we say here is, again, what pretty much you would see in an undergraduate networks course. I'm not going to really address randomness at all and how it enters into it. That's what the rest of the module is about. Okay. But what I would like you to do is see what are the performance characteristics we care about, and where do they enter into this? Okay. So we're not going to be concerned at this point with an exact representation of these characteristics and any worry about how we analyze them in the presence of uncertainty. Okay, so networks falls under the heading of telecommunications. There's many names, so telecommunications is nice. Tele means at a distance, and again, that's sort of the key to all forms of communications. Traditionally, the telephone networks have sort of monopolized the term telecommunications, but we're going to broaden it out to mean both communication between telephones and communications between computers. Okay. Again, historically, the networks over which this communication happened were quite separate, quite distinct. Okay. So this first slide probably shouldn't be headed telephone networks. It should probably be headed telecommunication networks. But people have been attempting to transmit information over a distance for quite a long time. Okay. What the telephone network did was it essentially made the transmission medium an electronic one. Prior to telephone networks, we had smoke signals, beacon fires, people waving flags at each other. There were a lot of different ways of trying to transmit messages when you weren't within shouting distance. Okay. And the fun thing about that is that all the basic principles of networks are there. We have protocols. If you're waving a flag at another person, well, you have to have some agreement about what all those gestures mean. Okay. You have physical transmission of a message. At some point, there has to be a point-to-point link. Okay, that might be in all of these cases, or most of these cases, that's a visual link, or it might just be a guy getting on a horse and riding to an agreed-upon point. But you have to have a physical way of getting a message from one point to another. Okay. And finally, what you're really interested in is extending the distance. Okay. And so what do you need to extend the distance? Well, you need to have some sort of relay. So it's not enough to get a message from one point to the next, but you need to get the message from one point to the next, to the next, to the next. Okay. And potentially, once you want to do that, well, there might be more than one way of getting a message from point A to point B. Okay. So again, what did the telephone networks do? Well, they made that electronic, and they transported a very specific sort of message. That message was the voice signal. Okay. So they've evolved over time a huge amount, but for our purposes, they had one fundamental function, and again, that was to transmit a voice signal. Okay. Initially, this voice signal was an analog signal, so just a wave. More recently, that has become a digital signal. But the signal had very specific characteristics in the sense that it persisted for an amount of time, and it required a fixed amount of bandwidth. Okay. So the resources needed to get that message from point A to point B were clear and persistent. Okay. And this led to a very specific design decision within telephone networks. There were what is called circuit switch, which means that when you want to have a conversation, all of the resources that you need to have that conversation, so the bandwidth you need over one link to the next link to the next link to the next link, is reserved in advance, and connection-oriented means that, well, it's going to be held for the duration of your conversation. And again, this is, for telephone networks, this is an efficient use of resources because of the nature of voice communication. Okay. Now, there's not a whole lot that's wildly significant to us in this timeline. It does give an indication of sort of how long telephone networks have been around relative to how long computer networks have been around. So arguably, you know, computer networks are a lot more complex, and they've sort of developed to do a lot more than telephone networks have, and they've done that in an incredibly short period of time. But anyway, let's see. Okay, so just jumping back, there are a few things I forgot on the timeline. The electrical telegraph actually started in the early 1800s. Okay, so this was the first transmission of an electrical signal over a wire for the purposes of communication. 1837 was the development of Morse code. So everybody's heard the dots and dashes, or, you know, SOS. So this gave a way of electrically transmitting signals, again, a long way. Okay. Now, again, those signals started out as just dots and dashes, and then in the mid-1800s, the idea of actually transmitting the voice signal arose. Starting in 1844 and arguably culminating in 1876 when Alexander Graham Bell demonstrated the transmission of a voice signal. Okay. And you'll notice it wasn't long at all before that demonstration turned into actual commercial networks. Well, that was because those commercial networks existed already for the transmission of telegraph signals, so the voice signal was just the technological improvement on telegraph signals. Okay. And so by the late 1800s, early 1900s, you actually had telephone networks. obviously by today's standards are quite primitive. Again, when you talk about forwarding on messages, there would have had to be a person at each of the forwarding points to actually decide on the routing, the way that the message was to be transmitted forward. And they would not certainly have gone worldwide. Okay. And evolution, in terms of evolution, well, at some points, the sort of penetration of telephone networks has grown. This is due to a few things, the automation of the switching. So you got rid of the person sort of plugging in, making physical connections, and you replaced that with a machine that was able to make those physical connections, and obviously that allowed for scaling. Technologically, the links, the amount of data or the amount of connections that can be carried over a single cable has grown significantly. The signal has been digitized, which again allowed for more efficient use of resources. And so that led to pretty much what we'd consider the modern telephone network. Okay. Now, up to certainly the 1980s, there was only essentially one flavor of telephone network. You had a telephone on the wall, and you were able to pick it up, dial, get where you wanted to go. Moving on from there, a big change in the telephony world is the advent of cellular networks and the main impact of those was not within the core of the network, not within trying to get your information from Dublin, Ireland to Washington, D.C. or Beijing or somewhere around the world, but actually in that first step in getting the user connected to the network. So for the first time, we had a new way to have users connect to the network. They didn't have to be in their house. And again, from our perspective, how is this interesting? Well, from our perspective, this represents a change in the traffic patterns of users. If they were all sitting in their houses or in their offices, you could actually get a pretty good idea of exactly who used the telephone and when. Now, with cellular networks, all bets are off. People are picking up the phone as they walk down the street, and you know, there are additional complications about how, as you're walking down the street, your connection has to actually change as you're walking, and it makes the analysis of traffic patterns a lot harder. Okay. Now, the other thing that's sort of fun and games for telephony networks is convergence. The telephony networks want to carry data traffic. Data traffic is a much more significant source of traffic than voice traffic these days. Okay. And in the core, well, it's actually not that much of a problem because you've got enough traffic, you can sort of lump it all together, and everything pretty much looks like pipes, just flows of traffic. At the edges, well, again, you've got to cater for the different traffic characteristics and also the different performance requirements of various applications. Okay. So, again, our other predominant form of telecommunications is the computer network, so trying to allow two computers to talk to each other. And this really started in approximately the 1960s, people started thinking about this. Perhaps slightly earlier, people were talking about or thinking about trying to connect to mainframes and all, but specifically getting computers to talk to each other was the early 60s. Okay. And what was, again, noticed was that the telephony approach was not very efficient. Computers were generating small amounts of sporadic traffic. So this idea of setting up a connection, reserving resources for them, was not an efficient way of going about resourcing. It's often done, or it was done, but there was a suggestion that maybe something else needed to be done. Okay. And so this led to a parallel network developing that was designed with the thought of computer traffic in mind. And so instead of being circuit switched, what developed was packet switching. Okay. And the concept behind packet switching is that you bundle all your information up into sort of finite amounts. The finiteness, it might be fixed length, it might be variable length, but you send a finite amount of information, you say where it needs to go, and you send it along. It's often compared to the postal method where you post a letter. So if you want to send a number of pieces of information, you would write a number of letters, you dump them in the post box. Each of those letters is handled essentially separately. Okay. Each one is examined to see where it needs to go. Okay. And what we see here is that queuing theory was used to demonstrate the efficiency of this system within the context of computer communications. Okay. So in the 60s and 70s, these ideas were around. They were largely a research concept. Okay. Now, the 70s was a time of development when these networks moved from being research products to being commercial offerings and sort of more specifically formed protocols. So people got a clearer idea of exactly how they wanted this data sent. Okay. And what happens here is that, again, some design principles emerge. So we have the idea of a best effort service, the idea of the routers being essentially just looking at a packet and sending it on. An idea that there would be no centralized control. Okay. Again, it was deemed to be difficult if you don't know exactly what you're controlling because the traffic is so unpredictable. Okay. So these sorts of principles started to emerge. The ideas of sort of thinking about how we should make device architectures for network emerged. And a number of specific implementations of networks also emerged. Okay. And some of them, again, are quite interesting. AlohaNet is very interesting because it provided the basics, or the basis for one of the most commonly used data link protocols in use today. So this was the first use of a contention-oriented protocol. Okay. Again, then that was implemented. That protocol was taken and implemented in Ethernet, so in a wired shared bus medium shortly thereafter. Okay. So again, there was a gelling of what people wanted to do, and the networks were sort of slowly expanding in size. Okay, so if you think about 200 nodes compared to the trillions today, then it's fairly small scale. Okay. And so in the 80s, we say new protocols and a proliferation of networks, but what we actually see is a convergence on some very specific protocols. Okay. So again, in 83, TCP/IP was deployed. And this is probably one of the most fundamental aspects of the internet, is specifically the agreement to use IP. Okay. Every portion of the internet uses IP. Okay. So there's a convergence in people agreeing that there's one best way to do things. Now again, that best way doesn't necessarily filter down to the point-to-point links. There's still a huge number of ways of making your point-to-point connections. But in terms of getting from node to node to node to node, navigating your way through thousands of nodes, there is some agreement on what the best way to do that is. Now what makes the internet interesting, again, is the fact that people use it. Why do people use the internet? Well, mainly because of the end-user applications. Okay. And we saw the development of very simple but very useful end-user applications in the 80s. So we have our basic email protocol. We have the domain name service, which tells us how to get from something that you or I understand to an IP address. We have the FTP protocol for transferring files. Okay, and what these protocols do is they allow end users who don't have a wildly technical background to make some use of the computer for communication purposes. Okay. And we see that, again, within this decade, the network is still growing, but it's not anywhere near the size it is today. Okay. So, the 90s saw the original killer app, namely the web. And, you know, again, arguably, the web has driven the massive expansion of the internet. And it has allowed end users a whole new way of communicating. So it's not just telephone communication anymore. It's video. It's the transmission of pictures, videos, music. All of these sort of, again, commercial applications that really, really makes this big and interesting. Okay. So just to pull up a few stats, there are greater than 600 million hosts, so 600 million computers running or IP addresses, and it's estimated over a billion users. Okay. So, again, what makes this interesting to us? Well, one thing that makes it interesting to us is that all of these applications have different requirements, different characteristics. We talked about sending voice and how this you need a steady stream of data at a very fixed bandwidth. If you're sending a video, well, you probably need a steady stream. Well, you need a fixed bandwidth. You can afford a little bit of variance. It doesn't have to be completely steady, but it still has to be somewhat steady. If you're sending a file, well, every bit of it has to get there correctly, and it might be massive. There's just all different sorts of data that have different requirements. Again, for us, this represents, well, this does two things. Again, we have to ask, what are the characteristics of the traffic that's typical on the internet? And again, file sharing is a huge amount different than making a voice call. And also, what sorts of demands are made on the network? All of these applications, again, have different characteristics and need slightly different things out of the network. So can we accommodate them? Okay. Okay, so again, so what? Just to wrap it up. Historically, we've had these two networks which were designed to be efficient for very different types of data, it's worth considering this because, again, they're sort of simple models for what's going on, okay? And we can look at the design decisions within the context of these fairly simple models. Nowadays, nothing is simple. The telephone companies provide access to the internet. They carry IP traffic. The internet, the internet similarly seeks to, or computers seek to replicate the voice traffic that you can get on phones. So, essentially nowadays you have one big mass of traffic. It's very complex. You have to think what percentage is doing this, what percentage is doing that, what percentage is doing the next thing. Of these, what are the requirements? How do they need to arrive at the other end? Okay. So one last picture in terms of just going on about networks. This is sort of another view of where we are. And it's sometimes helpful to think of these networks in terms of the core and the edge. Okay, so we've referred to getting from Dublin, Ireland to Beijing, China. And there's a couple of things going on there. Again, end to end in Dublin and Beijing, we have some application that we want to run, whether it's a Skype call or it's a traditional telephone call. Okay. From the network point of view, what this boils down to is needing to get some bit of information from Dublin to Beijing over a long distance. Okay. And the most efficient way to do this is, well, essentially at the edges, you have to connect up each individual entity that wants to get access to these to this data transport. Okay. Now, as the data travels along, it tends to get aggregated into sort of bigger and bigger pieces of bigger and bigger amounts of data, all going in the same direction. Like if you think about, well, it getting from the East Coast of the U.S. to, I don't know where it comes out, but anyway, there's a transatlantic cable. All the data is going to go along that transatlantic cable. Okay. And so this has a different characteristic, a different flavor, in the sense that as it's being transported, the network doesn't care what it is. It's just shoving it through. Okay. So frequently, we view the network as being an edge, which gives individual users access to the network, and then a core, which isn't worried about sort of high-level applications. It just sees a bunch of data, sort of a bunch of bits coming through it, and tries to move them through as quickly as possible. Okay. And what's significant to us is that the different protocols and different aspects of the network are more or less significant, sort of in the core or at the edges. Again, frequently, say we're talking about streaming video or something, the delays or the performance problems that are experienced are frequently not in the core. The core, at the moment anyway, has plenty of bandwidth, can shove things through at quite a nice rate. But frequently the problems exist at the edges. So it's worth sort of, again, thinking where exactly issues might arise. Okay. So what we're going to do now is sort of abstract away from all the details and try and take a look at the factors that are influencing our design decisions, and ways in which we can characterize them. Okay. So data is transported over networks for a huge number of reasons. Again, we've talked about a lot of them. We've talked about our traditional voice conversation. We've talked about file sharing, streaming videos, Skype connections. And all of this data has different characteristics, so it's going to put different loads on the networks, and it also has different requirements. So it has different expectations about when it arrives out at the other end, what form is it arriving in. So, as an example, if you had a file, and you were sending, you used FTP to send it, well, if it was slow, it's slow. There are some response times, they say, you know, like if it's a web and you're trying to access a web page, about 10 seconds is the most users are willing to wait. But compared to sort of voice, where, you know, a 10-second delay would be a disaster, it's quite different. On the other hand, if you have a file, it better all get there correctly. If you're missing a chunk out of the middle, probably the whole thing is wrong. Voice is the exact opposite. You can tolerate a certain amount of loss in voice, and the ear will just sort of smooth over it. Okay. So the challenge, again, we need to know how to model the traffic going in. And then the challenge for the networks is to be able to provide some level of service going out. Okay. And frequently to date, a lot of the level of service has just been done by over-provisioning of resources within the network. So you try and make sure that, you know, whatever sort of traffic is coming in, you know, there's plenty of resources to deal with it. Problem with that is, of course, you know, the demands keep expanding, and so your resources need to expand as well. Okay. Now, we're going to sort of describe data according to a very few characteristics, which again don't have so much to do with performance as connectivity, although connectivity is related to performance, as we'll see. And then we're going to have a look at the tools which the network can use to provide that connectivity. Okay. And essentially what this is different ways of allocating your resources. Okay. And what it'll become obvious that, well, one is the basic decision that was made in a telephone network, one is the basic decision that was made in a computer network. And a lot of the fun and games these days is trying to make the two of them coexist together. Okay. Okay. So, you'll often see the term network services, and there's two aspects to network services. The first is connectivity, and so there the question is, do you make an end-to-end connection or not? And the second is reliability. Okay, so do you care if your data gets there correctly or not? Okay. Again, what's missing from this sort of a characterization is any consideration of, well, how does delay impact on any of this? How does variability in delay impact on any of this? Okay, so this was essentially derived from a fairly simple worldview. Okay, so we have connection-oriented services, and as you would think, these are services where you establish a connection, and you use the connection, you release the connection. Again, this is the model of the telephony system. Okay. And the main feature of this is that data comes out of the connection in the same order that it went into the connection. We'll see that the implementation of a connection-oriented service, the way the telephony network chose to implement connection-oriented services, namely by reserving the resources all along the path, meant that there were some performance characteristics guaranteed. Okay, so if you reserve the resources, you also have some sort of bandwidth guarantee, which means that the voice would come out not only in the same order, but also at the same rate that it went in at. Okay, but that's an implementation detail and not a part of the basic definition of connection-oriented. Okay, connectionless services means that your data is broken into pieces, and each piece is sent independently of the other. Okay. And the upshot of this is that the data can arrive in a different order than that which it was transmitted in. Okay. So the second aspect on which we characterize our service is whether it's reliable or unreliable. And obviously a reliable service guarantees that the data is delivered correctly. An unreliable service does not. Okay, so obviously you can have all permutations of connection-oriented versus connectionless, reliable versus unreliable. Okay, and so for a reliable connection-oriented service, well, you can either preserve the exact characteristics of your data, or you can repackage it a bit, but you're still guaranteeing that, again, it's going to arrive in order. Okay, and obviously an unreliable service means that some of your data might not get there. The bits that are remaining arrive in order. Okay, and this would be your voice, classic voice connection. Okay, connectionless, again, can be either unreliable or reliable, and reliability, and it can also, it's either acknowledged or not. Okay. Okay. So this is a very basic description of the properties of an end-to-end connection. What we'll see is that there are tools for implementing these end-to-end connections. Specifically, we look at switching, multiplexing, which have to do with how the paths are decided and the resources are allocated, and certain ways of doing one or the other will lend themselves to providing certain types of services. Certain connections are more naturally catered to by certain types of services than others. But essentially, you can provide any sort of service over any sort of implementation. Okay. So again, we've said that circuit switching, that connection-oriented is more like the telephony network, and we'll see that there's a specific paradigm for switching called circuit switching, and this is quite natural. It exactly sort of is what we want to do, but it's also possible to send a packet over a circuit switch. Okay, so you can have either type of service over the same sort of implementation. It's just, there's an issue of efficiency. Okay, now, there are two main flavors of switching, circuit switching, and packet switching, and again, this has to do with essentially whether you set up a connection, a physical connection, a resource-oriented connection, or not. Okay, so in circuit switching, the resources, so the switch and then the bandwidth along a link, are reserved specifically for an end-to-end connection. Okay, so you might go through a number of nodes, and at each node, you don't wait. You just essentially have a path set up, and it's a matter of pushing the data along. Okay, so in this sort of a setup, you don't share the links. You have a guarantee of performance because you know exactly what resources you've been given, you know what bandwidth, and you know you aren't going to encounter any untoward delays in the network due to sort of congestion because you've already reserved everything you need. Okay. The cost of this, well, the cost of this is that you are tying up network resources, and there's also a delay associated with the setup. It can be as much as a second. Okay. This is ideal for smooth traffic, but is inefficient for bursty traffic. So if you think about, you know, a packet being sent and then a long while going by and another packet or two being sent, then it's not really efficient to have tied up all the resources within the network just waiting in case you feel like sending a packet. Okay. So, you know, you could try setting up a new circuit each time, but again, then you'll run into a per packet delay, or you could hold the resources, but then from an overall network standpoint, that's inefficient. Okay. Now we said that the links weren't shared, and that's true, but they can be sort of subdivided into portions. So if you have one wire, then you can use that wire to send more than one signal at a time, potentially. And you can do this by either transmitting your signals in different frequency bands or breaking up your signals into time slots and sending at time slots. Okay. So, again, what's your overall frequency range? The overall frequency range of a link is determined by the physical characteristics of a link. And then within that, your traffic would probably need something, some smaller portion of that, so you can send multiple traffic at once. Similarly, in terms of time, well, this is corresponding essentially to the bit rate at which you can transmit signals. And so either, you know, you need the whole link's worth of bit rate, or if you don't, then if you're sending four signals, then each one of them gets essentially a quarter of that bit rate. Okay. So, again, that circuit switching is ideal for a voice connection, but it was deemed to be very inefficient for computer data. So computer data had different characteristics. First of all, it tended to be sort of, again, small amounts of data needing to be sent at sort of unpredictable times. And so the idea was that, well, those, we can package up those bits of data. Okay, so we send a certain amount of data at a time. And, well, since it's only coming every once in a while, we essentially treat each of those packages on its own. Okay. So, this led to the idea of packet switching. And again, data is broken up into packets, and each packet has an address saying where it needs to go to, and then it's sent along into the network, which handles, the network looks at the address at various stages and sends it on its way. Okay. So the main difference is that resources are not reserved in advance for specifically this packet. Okay, so it arrives at an intermediate point at a node, and it has to wait for the resources at that node to be available. Now, if for some reason lots of packets arrive at the node at the same time, then a queue forms. So the packets have to wait at this node for the resources to be available. Okay. Now, if you were setting up a link, what would happen when that you got to that node? Well, the link couldn't be set up using that node if it was busy. Okay. So you're trading off being able to send your data into the network without having the resources waiting in advance against delaying your data as it goes through the network. Okay. Now, nodes use what's called store and forward, which means that each node, the packet is received fully before it is transmitted on. So it's not forwarded on a bit-by-bit basis, it's forwarded on a packet basis. Okay. So, again, this just shows that, again, you have to receive the packet before it can be transmitted out. You don't, if you have a stream of packets coming in, well, you don't have to wait for all of them to come out. You know, one thing about splitting up your data, each packet is forwarded. Once a packet's received, it can be forwarded. So you have some pipelining of data going on. Now, again, this is contrasted with a connection-oriented system, so a call where the data is essentially forwarded on bit by bits without any delay. Okay, or the delay is at the level of bits, not at the level of some larger chunk like a packet. Okay. So, again, the reservation of resources is called statistical multiplexing. So we had, if you thought of a link, and if we were dividing it up into sublinks, then you had, you could do that using either time division multiplexing statistical or statistical multiplex, or sorry, frequency division multiplexing. Here we have what's called statistical multiplexing, which essentially means that the packets are processed as the switch is able, okay? And again, they wait for the resources to become available. So it's multiplexing in the sense that you have multiple sources getting access to a single resource. It's not multiplexing in the sense, the traditional sense of sort of chunking everything up into small defined pieces. Okay. So that's one question, is just when you're at a node, what happens? The other question is, how do you get from end to end? So you're going through a number of nodes, and I'll skip that just because I'm on flow. If you have a number of nodes, then you have a couple of choices for how to make a decision about how the packets travel through an overall network. Again, usually there would be choices as to routes through the network. There's more than one possible connection. If you have a circuit switch, what you're doing is pinning that down to exactly one connection. With packet switching, you aren't pinning it down. Okay, so there are two flavors of making this routing decision. The first, purest flavor, is datagram packet switching, which, as we said in the beginning, we have cut our data into packets or portions. Each one of those is treated completely differently. When they reach a node, the destination address is examined, and the packet is forwarded on to the next node just based on the destination address. Okay. And the consequence of this is that packets can go in different directions throughout the network, and potentially arrive out of order. Okay. So, sometimes this is seen as not being out completely desirable. Again, think about sending a long file. You've split it up into packets. If they come in higgledy-piggledy, there's going to be a lot of work at the end, sort of reordering the packets and getting it back into a file. Okay. So a second option is that a path is defined through the network, and all of the packets associated with the data being sent travel along the same route through the network. It's not a connection in the sense that we don't necessarily, or we'll just say we don't reserve resources for this path. When it gets to a node, again, statistical multiplexing kicks in and the packets are dealt with sort of in conjunction with all the other packets that are arriving from different points and different data streams. But once they're dealt with, they're sent along the same path through the network. Okay. So the benefits of this are, again, you can deal with the burstiness in the sense that you still have statistical multiplexing, so the node will be active as long as some data needs to go through. But in terms of the specific stream of traffic, it will arrive at the other side in order, which, you know, again, if you're sending a fair amount of data, can be quite advantageous. Okay. So, again, it's good to have these different ways of handling data transport tucked at the back of your mind. A lot of times one or the other will come to the fore, just depending on the sort of problem that we're looking at, whether it's more of a telephony problem, whether it's more of a computer network problem. But there are specific reasons that these two sort of ways of handling data arose. And again, there's a big challenge these days in sort of merging all the types of data and coming up with a solution that allows all sorts of data to be catered for. Okay. Again, the other thing that this doesn't address is the idea of performance. And the way the network is implemented has implications for performance. Again, like if you think about data traveling along different paths, well, the delay the data is going, different packets experiences is going to be variable. And if you have a circuit, things are much more predictable. So what I'm going to take a break now. When we return, we're going to have a quick look at, again, performance parameters, where do they come from, what sort of impact do they have.